This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Governor Jim Justice has issued a special session call for the West Virginia legislature to consider matters related to the removal of one or more justices on the state Supreme Court of Appeals. The special session will begin today at noon. Much of the conversation surrounding this has centered around Justice Alan Laufrey, who has been indicted on 22 counts of federal charges, including fraud, witness tampering, and making false statements. Now the ball is rolling for impeachment, and very, very quickly, it appears. Joining us now is senior reporter Dave Mistich to unpack all of this for us. And yes, there's a lot to unpack, right?
Yeah, Teresa. Yes, there's a lot to. There is a lot to take a look at here.
Dave, thanks for being here.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
First, Dave, if you would, please bring us up to speed on the situation with Justice Laufrey.
Well, you know, this all started late last year with reports of lavish spending by the court. Namely, we all heard about the $32,000 couch that was part of millions of dollars of spending that was discovered to have been a part of court renovations. Justice Laufrey, in a presentation to the House Finance Committee back in January, denied knowledge of it, basically tried to defend all of this. There was a legislative audit, you know, and it took a look at spending on these reservations, the use of state resources for personal use. Following that, there was a statement of charges of 32 charges by the Judicial Investigations Commission. That was back in early June. Shortly after that, Laufrey was suspended without pay. And then just last week on West Virginia Day, June 20th, Laufrey was indicted on federal charges, 22 counts that you had mentioned, and that was just last week.
Okay, so far, all of this coming to light. The legislature's Joint Committee on the Judiciary met yesterday. Mm-hmm. That was at the request of the Senate President Mitch Carmichael and House Speaker Tim Armstead. That committee was to review materials related to the potential impeachment of Laufrey and possibly other justices, correct?
That's right. And so the Joint Committee heard presentations on Monday, which is yesterday, of course, from various other commissions, including the State Ethics Commission, the Judicial Investigations Commission, the Legislative Auditor, constitutional offices such as the Auditor's Office. And again, you know, a lot of this was essentially just a rundown of the procedure and the functions and the process of a lot of these offices and taking a look at fraud and abuse across state government. There were a lot of procedural questions, a few motions. They had talked about splitting the group into subcommittees to sort of make recommendations. After all of that, it got very much in the weeds, I should point out. After all that, they did take a recess around 12:30 until about 5.
Which is when Senate President Mitch Carmichael and Speaker Pro Tem John Overington released a letter to the governor's office requesting a special session on impeachment, right?
That's absolutely right. It came around 4:15, 4:30, somewhere right before that that joint committee was supposed to come back.
But we should note, over in the House, Speaker Tim Armstead didn't sign this letter. He wasn't part of this request for a special session call on impeachment. Why is that?
Right. So Speaker Armstead isn't running for re-election in the House this year. He made that announcement earlier this past year during the legislative session. When he announced that he wasn't running for House, he did express some interest on a seat on the Supreme Court bench, possibly in 2020. But, you know, he wasn't exactly very clear whether or not he was going to run, but he did express some interest. So, you know, in an effort to avoid any appearance of a conflict of interest, Armstead has handed over speaker duties in this case to, Speaker Pro Tem Delegate John Overington. Armstead issued a statement explaining all of it, his reasoning behind it. But I also caught him at the Capitol, and here's what he said about all of it.
I haven't said that I would be running in 2020 or would seek a seat if one came open before then. But because I have expressed interest, I feel like in an abundance of caution that I should allow the Speaker Pro Tem to make certain decisions relating to this. And there is a rule in the House rules when there's a vote that you request this, the presiding officer, to determine whether or not you should vote. So if in fact there are votes relating to this, I would turn the podium over to the Speaker Pro Tem and ask him to rule whether I should or shouldn't vote on those things.
And again, that was Speaker Tim Armstead explaining why he has made this attempt to excuse himself from impeachment of one or more of the state Supreme Court justices. Basically, to recap all of that, there may or may not be a conflict of interest, but he has said that in the past he might run for a seat on the bench. So here we are.
So back to the impeachment itself. Tell us a little bit about why this matters so much and what we should expect.
Well, you know, there's not a lot of precedent for this, for impeachments here. The last time this came up actually was 1989 with A. James Manchin when he was serving as treasurer. He resigned before the process was completed, and there's no need to get into all of that right now in this moment. But even still, I should note that the lack of precedent brings this sense of carefulness from the Republican majority in the legislature, as you'll hear right here from Senate Judiciary Chair Charles Trump.
For me, the most important thing, more important than that, is that the process be such that it's done correctly. We want to make sure everything is done right, that due process and constitutional requirements are followed and adhered to. That's the most important thing, than a particular time frame.
But the timing that Chairman Trump, a Republican, refers to there, some Democrats have expressed a sense of urgency about all this. Why is that?
Well, it all comes down to the fact that Loffrey still holds the seat on the bench. Of course, he is suspended without pay. Chief Justice Margaret Workman has appointed a replacement during the suspension, but that appointment isn't permanent. However, if and when he is removed from his seat, the timing matters because of a special session. Now, if Loffrey were to resign or be impeached and tried and convicted and removed from office before August 14th, there would be a special election this November. The people would get to vote on it here in just a few months. If it were to happen after August 14th, if he were to vacate his seat, as they say, that special election wouldn't take place. Based on my understanding of state code and the state constitution and everyone I've talked to at the Capitol, that would not take place until May of 2020. Now, Delegate Mike Pushkin, a Democrat, he spoke to me about all of this.
If a vacancy is created on the Supreme Court or for any elected official, in order to address that on the November ballot and allow the people, allow the voters to decide who fills that vacancy, we would have to have our action completed prior to August 14th.
Now, everyone should keep in mind that if Loffrey would be removed by impeachment or resign, Governor Justice would be the one to appoint a full-on replacement. It's just a matter of who would fill the rest of that term, which actually finishes up in 2024. But basically, with all this, it's a matter of who would be appointed, how long that appointee would be in place until a special election, when that special election would take place. And again, with Armstead expressing interest in being on the bench, Democrats are very skeptical of this entire process, certainly cognizant of that August 14th deadline.
Right. Delegate Pushkin has been calling for Justice Loffrey's impeachment since January, back in the legislative session, just after these reports of spending by the court first came out.
Right. That is true, and we do need to point that out. But I will say that Senate President Mitch Carmichael, who back during the session was very critical of Pushkin's call for Loffrey's impeachment back in January. At this point, he's completely on board with impeachment now. I spoke with Carmichael after he called on Justice to issue this proclamation for a special session. He explained his position on feeling like impeachment was premature back then and why now is the time to go forward.
Nobody should initiate impeachment proceedings, which have rarely, if ever, been done in West Virginia's 155-year history, based on a report filed by a reporter or a news media organization. No disrespect, but certainly no one should jump to the nuclear option based on a report like that. So no, this has taken the exact proper course where the evidence was uncovered by a media outlet. There's reports began to surface on that. More evidence began to develop. Now, at this point, it's appropriate to consider additional action.
So Democrats got their wish. Republicans are on board. Governor Justice has issued the call. What now?
Well, the ball basically is rolling now. We know this. I spoke with Delegate Sean Fluharty, who is very vocal about issues of procedure, constitutionality, the timing of this whole impeachment process. He was happy to get the call and for things to be moving along.
By prolonging it, it takes the power away from the people and puts it in the power of a select few individuals here in Charleston. Now the people put Justice Loffrey into office. The legislature has the power to remove him from office, and I believe the people should decide who is next if we decide to move forward with impeachment proceedings. By prolonging it, it takes away the power from the people. And today, as we just learned, by the governor calling a special session, it helps with the constitutionality of this so that we can move forward with the appropriate powers as far as our discovery process with the legislature and impeachment proceedings.
And again, that was Delegate Sean Fluharty explaining his sense of urgency for all this, as well as some of the other issues at play. You know, just to wrap this all up really quickly with you, Teresa, you know, the House and the Senate will come in. They'll both, you know, I believe that there'll be a resolution to take all this up. You know, they have the call from the governor. In this case, the House will draw up articles of impeachment spelling out these allegations as such. And then, you know, after all that's said and done and voted on in the House, if and when that goes through, the Senate will act as jurors, and likely Laufrey and any other justices who come up in these impeachment proceedings, you know, they'll be tried over in the Senate. So that pretty much is the best we can wrap it up right now. It'll obviously things will start to happen very quickly, but we'll have our eye on all of this as it plays out.
Dave Mistich is the senior reporter at West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Dave, thanks so much for joining me and explaining all this to us.
No problem. Thanks, Teresa.
You can watch live coverage of the special session beginning today at noon on the West Virginia Channel, on West Virginia Public Broadcasting's Facebook page, and on our website, wvpublic.org. 10 folklore students from George Mason University in Virginia recently spent a week visiting central and southern West Virginia. They traveled to 5 counties to learn more about the culture, stories, and history found throughout our area. Roxy Todd sat down with 2 of the students at the end of their field trip to hear about their experience.
Part of a summer folklore course at George Mason University in Virginia is to record and study oral histories in West Virginia. That was the focus of a recent field trip taken by 10 graduate and undergraduate students. For most of them, like Alex Bridges, this was their first experience traveling to West Virginia.
We were talking to people last night, and they all were saying, you know, we're a family here. We take care of our own. We care about each other in a very, very intimate way. And honestly, I think that was really beautiful to come away with.
Bridges grew up outside Washington, D.C., she has family who used to live in West Virginia, but she's never had the opportunity to visit.
I honestly was not expecting to enjoy myself as much as I have. It's a beautiful state, beautiful people, beautiful just environment to be in. And I honestly wish that I had been able to come here sooner in my life.
Over the course of a week, she and 9 other folklore students traveled with their professor to record oral history interviews with coal miners, musicians, and artists in Beckley, Logan, Matewan, and Charleston. They also visited the Mountaineer Opry House in Milton, where owner Larry Stevens was about to close up the historic business for good. Stevens tells the students the Mountaineer Opry House was in operation for more than 45 years before being sold this May. It showcased hundreds of bluegrass and old-time shows over the years. Here's part of an interview the students recorded with Stevens on one of the last days the venue was in operation.
The old man that originally built the building was Paul King. Paul had a vision that this would be the Grand Ole Opry of Milton. And it's kind of lived up to that in a way. He was a good man, and he had a vision, and I think it's been a blessing to the people of this area.
In 1991, the original owner asked Stevens if he would consider taking over the business, and he did for nearly 3 decades.
He told me, he said, "Now, Larry," he said, "I'm going to tell you, son," he said, "you ain't going to make no money, but you will enjoy it." And he was totally right.
This interview with Stevens and 25 other recordings will eventually be archived at the West Virginia and Regional History Collection at West Virginia University. These recordings aren't with people who are well-known or are used to being in the limelight, but they have experiences worth preserving, says folklore student Luke Mitchum.
I think it's been a struggle for us, maybe as a group this week, to help people realize that everyone has a story and everyone has a unique story. And those are important voices to share with other people that can relate to those stories, but also their story is going to be different too.
Mitchum is originally from Missouri. And like some of the other students, he says he found a connection to the people he met through this project, something he says he's missed while in school in Northern Virginia.
And just talk about life and actually be able to look at each other in the eye and have a conversation. Because I feel like that's something that has always been a hard part for me to adjust to in Northern Virginia and D.C. is people don't look you in the eye very much and aren't very considerate and just generally kind. And it's refreshing to come to West Virginia, although it's not only West Virginia where kind people are. I mean, there's kind people everywhere. But it's just a nice reminder that there is a lot of kindness out there, and there's a lot of love, and there is a lot of support for one another. And that's probably one of the biggest things I pulled from this trip this week.
Retelling and saving all kinds of different folklore is something several of the students say does matter. Even though most of the conversations focused on stories of the past, Alex Bridges, the student we heard from earlier, says these types of stories can teach young people, like herself, important lessons for the future.
I definitely think so. I feel like that old adage, history repeats itself, is very important and very true. So we can learn a lot from the past and from our older folks. And I also feel like it's important to just preserve the stories, preserve the traditions, preserve everything that's about the past so that it's available for people in the future. Like, I think about how much we've lost over, you know, the years because nobody recorded it or the wrong people recorded it.
The students say they hope to return to West Virginia one day to revisit some of the people they met on this field trip and to discover more of the unique culture here in our mountains. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Roxy Todd.